Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of October 30th, 2018, and episode number 374. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And well, this week is not a live show, so I'm not sitting in the chat room tonight. I'm actually down in Westerville, Ohio, the Westerville Public Library, doing a live presentation. So this is not live. And this week, we are going to be giving you a special Halloween edition of the Paranormal News Insider. And if you've been a fan of this show in years past, you know this is something I do every year, or try to do every year at least. And I didn't want to leave Halloween empty this year with knowing I wasn't going to be able to do a live show, which I prefer to do. But in the years past, I've done the same thing. Last year, I brought some facts, figures, and some stories about Halloween, as well as the oldest ghost story ever known. Granted, I did that live, but however, this year, yeah, like I said, I'm doing a presentation, the last one of the year for me, so I'm kind of excited about that, to get the rest of the year off so far. I don't know, probably won't be doing any in-house public appearances. I may do maybe a radio show or two. I don't know. We'll see. Looking back, the year prior, 2016, I presented the episode Hitchhiker from the radio play show Suspense. That was back from September 2nd, 1942, and the play starred Orson Welles and was adapted to in a 1960 episode of The Twilight Zone. And in 2015, I presented the Ralph Edwards-produced Suspense radio play show and the episode called Ghost Hunt from June 23rd, 1949. In years previous to 2015, I made live appearances on the Grand Dark Conspiracy for live specials that included everything from live Ouija board sessions, live seances, and I can't remember what else we did. A lot of crazy stuff back then. And in 2014, probably my favorite radio interview of all time, it was a live two-hour interview in the studios of WQTT-AM out of Marysville, Ohio, following my Westerville Public Library appearance back in, again, 2014. And this year, 2018, is my 10th consecutive year in that library. So you can see why it was such a big deal for me to actually miss my show tonight. But you're in luck. You're not going to miss the show. And one thing I just want to mention real quick, I've been already getting a flurry of emails about people wanting me to promote their 2019 paranormal conferences and conventions. Yes, get that stuff in. It's about that time of the year when people are plugging these things for next year, and I'm going to be starting to put together my 2019 list. I've got a handful of events already, but I'm going to be digging in over the course of the next few weeks. My hope is throughout November, I'm going to get a lot of events online and put into place, and we'll be sadly saying goodbye to my 2018 list and be updating the entire list. And, you know, I'm kind of adding 2019 events at the end of the 2018 stuff. But I think probably halfway through this month, I'm going to convert it to 2019 with just a few 2018 events sprinkled in for good measure. We're about ready to flip the calendar. So again, if you have any information about any event and would like to hear about it here, as well as see it on the website, which the website gets tons of clicks. So if you want to help get your show promoted, your event promoted, let me know. Paranewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab. Check it out. If you don't see your event, you can email me or get a hold of me through the contact tab on the website at paranewsinsider.com. And again, I mentioned tonight I'm live in Westerville, at the Westerville Public Library for my 10th consecutive year, talking about cryptids, cryptozoology, and basically Ohio creepy creatures that exist. Always excited about that. Love that library. And I love speaking at libraries nonetheless. They're all exciting. They're all fun. And they're all interesting. And as far as news, I did have a few bits of news, but it's really nothing earth-shattering or earth-shaking. Just a couple of UFO stories that turned out to be identifiable stuff. And so I don't want to bore you tonight with talking about some of the same old stories, as tonight you're geared up for Halloween. And Halloween is actually tomorrow. And I know this show is going to be broadcast also on November 5th. I'm taking that week off as well. So if you're listening in, November 6th. Good grief. I'm behind here. So if you're listening live on October 30th or you're listening on November 6th, I appreciate you and I will be back the following week. So yes, on the 13th, it's not Friday, it's Tuesday, November 13th, I'll be live back in the studio, back from a short break, well-deserved break here during the silly season as it is. It's kind of like our new year almost for those of us in the paranormal. So it's kind of a reset button in a little bit. Plus, I've got some of the big stories. I'll be putting that together for the end of the year coming pretty soon. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we get deeper into November and hopefully not too much deeper in the snow. But it's coming. That weather is right around the corner. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. And we know that on Thursday morning, we're going to be hearing Christmas songs in the malls and in the stores. But man, can we just enjoy Halloween? And like I mentioned at the top of the show, I've done facts and figures about Halloween. I did some studies about Halloween. We talked about some of the top costumes and things like that last year. And one topic I've always seemed to avoid because I see a lot of people talking about it, a lot of people blogging about it, is the actual history of Halloween. So that's one thing I've never tackled here. And it's I did want to talk about it last year. And I remember a few people mentioning that, hey, how come you're not talking about the history of Halloween? Well, you're in luck because this year's Paranormal News Insider special Halloween edition, we're going to be talking about the ancient origins of Halloween and some of the history and traditions. I think there's a little bit of confusion with some of these things, and I do want to talk about this because I think it's interesting how some of our traditions that we have here in 2018, and maybe you grew up with some of this stuff, where some of these things come from. I think it's important for us to remember and reflect on where things come from, our folklore, our culture, our traditions. Where do they actually come from? Well, here in the United States, we are really and truly a melting pot. So most of our traditions surrounding Halloween have come from other countries and throughout time. So what I'm going to bring to you here is kind of a combination of a few different pieces of information. The main piece here is actually from a kind of, I guess you'd call it a blog on the History Channel's online website, history.com. And they have a History of Halloween link. And so a lot of what I'm going to be talking about here is from that link. But I've also put in some other information that I've researched, just kind of sprinkled in. So it's basically this article, but it's more expanded. I'll be sharing that link with everybody on Wednesday because that's the primary piece of this show. So ancient origins of Halloween. Halloween's origins date back to the ancient Celtic festival of Samhain. And the festival's name pronunciation seems to take a lot of focus. And I know the guys in the television show Supernatural, I had to stop and rewind this. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not too big on paranormal television shows. I do like to watch them every now and again. But more often than not, I end up throwing things at the television. And this, when I first heard them pronounce Samhain, and they pronounced it Samhain, which is wrong. It looks like it. That's how it's spelled. I get it. But when I saw that, I had to rewind it. I'm like, what did they just say? I was a little shocked. Anyway, the Celts who lived 2,000 years ago in the area, which is now called Ireland, the United Kingdom and Northern France, celebrated their new year on November 1st. So this day marked the end of summer and the harvest and the beginning of the dark, cold winter, a time of the year that was often associated with human death. Wow, did you hear that? I hear crackling of a fire. Suddenly getting warm in here, in the studio. Well, you know, just kick back and relax and listen to the crackling of the fire as I tell you the story of Halloween. Well, the Celts believed that on the night before the new year, the boundary between the worlds of the living and the dead become blurred. On the night of October 31st, they celebrated Samhain, and when it was believed that the ghosts of the dead returned to Earth. In addition to causing trouble and damaging crops, the Celts thought that the presence of the otherworldly spirits made it easier for the druids, or Celtic priests, to make predictions about the future. For a people entirely dependent on the volatile natural world, these prophecies were an important source of comfort and direction during that long, dark winter. To commemorate the event, druids built huge sacred bonfires where the people gathered to burn crops and animals as sacrifices to the Celtic deities. During the celebration, the Celts wore costumes typically consisting of animal heads and skins and attempted to tell each other's fortunes. That's an interesting one. When the celebration was over, they relit their hearth fires, which they had extinguished earlier that evening, from the sacred bonfire to help protect them during the coming winter. By 43 AD, the Roman Empire had conquered the majority of Celtic territory. In the course of the 400 years that they ruled the Celtic lands, two festivals of the Roman origin were combined with the traditional Celtic celebration of Samhain. So that's when it began, the blending of ceremonies. And yes, the first was Feralia, a day in late October when the Romans traditionally commemorated the passing of the dead. The second was a day to honor Pomona, the Roman goddess of fruit and trees. The symbol of Pomona is the apple, and the incorporation of the celebration into Samhain probably explains the tradition of bobbing for apples. I'm sure you might have done that once or twice. That is practiced today on Halloween, and to me it never made sense. What the heck are we doing bobbing apples on this weird holiday where we're all dressing up and trying to get candy? That kind of starts to shed a little bit of light onto some of these confusing things that don't seem to tie in together. It's because they don't. They're tying in other holidays, other traditions. And another one is All Saints Day. So on May 13th, 609 AD, Pope Boniface IV dedicated the Pantheon in Rome in honor of all the Christian martyrs, and the Catholic feast of All Martyrs' Day was established in the Western Church. Pope Gregory III, who took over the papacy in 731 until his death in 741 AD, expanded the festival to include all saints as well as all martyrs and moved the observance from May 13th to November 1st. By the 9th century, the influence of Christianity had spread into the Celtic lands, where it gradually blended with and supplanted the older Celtic rites. In 1000 AD, the church would make November 2nd All Souls Day, a day to honor the dead. It's widely believed today that the church was attempting to replace the Celtic festival of the dead with a related church-sanctioned holiday. That would never happen, would it? Of course. Well, anyway, the All Souls Day was celebrated similarly to Samhain, with big bonfires, parades, and dressing up in costumes as saints, angels, and devils. The All Saints Day celebration was also called All Hallows or All Hallowmas, and the night before it, the traditional night of Samhain in the Celtic region, began to be called All Hallows Eve, and eventually, yes, Halloween. Celebration of Halloween was extremely limited in colonial New England because of the rigid Protestant belief systems there. Halloween was much more common in Maryland and the southern colonies, as the beliefs and customs of different European ethnic groups as well as the American Indians meshed. A distinctly American version of Halloween began to emerge. The first celebrations included play parties, which were public events held to celebrate the harvest, where neighbors would share stories of the dead, tell each other's fortunes, dance, and sing. Colonial Halloween festivals also feature the telling of ghost stories and mischief-making of all kinds. By the middle of the 19th century, annual autumn festivals were common, but Halloween was not yet celebrated anywhere in the country. In the second half of the 19th century, America was flooded with new immigrants. These new immigrants, especially the millions of Irish fleeing the Irish potato famine, helped to popularize the celebration of Halloween nationally. So where does all this trick-or-treating stuff come in? Well, borrowing from Irish and English traditions, Americans began to dress up in costumes and go house to house asking for food and money, a practice that eventually became today's trick-or-treat tradition. Young women believed that on Halloween they could divine the name or appearance of their future husband by doing tricks with yarn, apple parings, or mirrors. In the late 1800s, there was a move in America to mold Halloween into a holiday more about community and neighborly get-togethers than about ghosts, pranks, and witchcraft. At the turn of the century, Halloween parties for both children and adults became the most common way to celebrate the day. Parties focused on games, food, foods of the season, and festive costumes. Parents were encouraged by newspapers and community leaders to take anything frightening or grotesque out of Halloween celebrations. Because of these efforts, Halloween lost most of its superstitious and religious overtones by the beginning of the 20th century. So what about other celebrations, such as the Day of the Dead in Mexico and other South American countries? Well, Dia de Muertos, or Dia de los Muertos, are other names for the Day of the Dead that was originally held in the early summer to remember those who have passed and to help them in their spiritual journey. After 16th century colonization by the Spanish, this holiday slowly moved toward November 1st, just as other European traditions, which helped eventually forge Halloween. Unlike our Halloween, the Day of the Dead is actually a three-day holiday that starts on October 31st and goes through November 2nd. Essentially, October 31st is All Hallows' Eve. The children make a children's altar to invite the angelitos, the spirits of dead children, to come back for a visit. November 1st is All Saints' Day. The adults' spirits will come to visit. And November 2nd is All Souls' Day, when families go to the cemetery to decorate the graves and tombs of their relatives. In a strange twist of how pop culture can affect folklore, the 2015 James Bond film Spectre, the opening sequence features a Day of the Dead parade in Mexico City. Interestingly, at the time, no such parade took place in Mexico City, but 1 year later, due to the interest in the film and the government desire to promote the pre-Hispanic Mexican culture, the federal and local authorities decided to organize an actual Día de Muertos parade on October 29, 2016, which was attended by around a quarter of a million people. So, Halloween parties. By the 1920s and 1930s, Halloween had become a secular but community-centered holiday, with parades and town-wide Halloween parties as the featured entertainment. Despite the best efforts of many schools and communities, vandalism began to plague some celebrations in many communities during this time. By the 1950s, town leaders had successfully limited vandalism, and Halloween had evolved into a holiday directed mainly at the young. Due to the high numbers of young children during the 50s baby boom, parties moved from town civic centers into the classroom or home, where they could be more easily accommodated. Between 1920 and 1950, the centuries-old practice of trick-or-treating was also revived. Trick-or-treating was a relatively inexpensive way for an entire community to share the Halloween celebration. In theory, families could also prevent tricks from being played on them by providing the neighborhood children with small treats. Thus, a new American tradition was born, and it has continued to grow. Today, Americans spend an estimated $6 billion annually on Halloween, making it the country's second largest commercial holiday, yes, after Christmas. And one quarter of all the candy sold annually in the U.S. is purchased for Halloween. So the American Halloween tradition of trick-or-treating probably dates back to the early All Souls Day parades in England. During the festivities, poor citizens would beg for food and families would give them pastries called soul cakes in return for their promise to pray for the family's dead relatives. The distribution of soul cakes was encouraged by the church as a way to replace the ancient practice of leaving food and wine for roaming spirits. The practice, which was referred to as going a-souling, was eventually taken up by children who would visit the houses in their neighborhood and be given ale, food, and money. The tradition of dressing in costume for Halloween has both European and Celtic roots. Hundreds of years ago, winter was an uncertain and frightening time. Food supplies often ran low, and for the many people afraid of the dark, the short days of winter were full of constant worry. On Halloween, when it was believed that ghosts came back to the earthly world, people thought that they could encounter ghosts if they left their homes. To avoid being recognized by these ghosts, people would wear masks when they left their homes after dark so that ghosts would mistake them for fellow spirits. On Halloween, to keep ghosts away from their houses, people would place bowls of food outside their homes to appease the ghosts and prevent them from attempting to enter. And one question I've been asked a few times is about black cats. I've heard a couple of different stories about black cats, but I do like the History Channel's version of this. So Halloween has always been a holiday filled with mystery, magic, and superstition. It began as a Celtic end-of-summer festival during which people felt especially close to deceased relatives and friends. For those friendly spirits, they set places at the dinner table, left treats on doorsteps and along the side of the road, and lit candles to help loved ones find their way back to the spirit world. Today, Halloween ghosts are often depicted as more fearsome and malevolent, and our customs and superstitions are scarier too. We avoid crossing paths with black cats, afraid that they might bring us bad luck. Well, this idea has its roots in the Middle Ages, when many people believed that witches avoided detection by turning themselves into black cats. We try not to walk under ladders for the same reason. The superstition may have come from ancient Egyptians who believed that triangles were sacred. Well, it may also have something to do with the fact that walking under a leaning ladder tends to be fairly unsafe. And around Halloween especially, we try to avoid breaking mirrors, stepping on cracks, or spilling salt. But, you know, one thing is missing here, and this is something that we don't do anymore. What about the Halloween traditions and beliefs that today's trick-or-treaters have forgotten all about? There's a lot of things here. Many of these obsolete rituals focused on the future instead of the past, and the living instead of the dead. In particular, many had to do with helping young women identify their future husbands and reassuring them that they would someday, with luck, by next Halloween, be married. In 18th century Ireland, a matchmaking cook might bury a ring in her mashed potatoes on Halloween night, hoping to bring true love to the dinner who found it. In Scotland, fortune tellers recommended that an eligible young woman named a hazelnut for each of her suitors and then toss the nuts into the fireplace. The nut that burned to ashes rather than popping or exploding, the story went, represented the girl's future husband. In some versions of this legend, the opposite was true. The nut that burned away symbolized a love that would not last. Another tale had it that a young woman ate a sugary concoction made out of walnuts, hazelnuts and nutmeg before bed on Halloween night, she would dream about her future husband. Young woman tossed apple peels over their shoulders, hoping that the peels would fall on the floor in the shape of their future husband's initials. Tried to learn about their futures by peering at egg yolks floating in a bowl of water, and stood in front of mirrors in darkened rooms, holding candles and looking over their shoulders for their husband's faces. I think that's evolved into some other scary things. Other rituals were more competitive. At some Halloween parties, the first guest to find a burr on a chestnut would be the first to marry. At others, the first successful apple bobber would be the first down the aisle. Of course, whether we're asking for romantic advice or trying to avoid 7 years of bad luck, each one of these Halloween superstitions relies on the goodwill of the same spirits whose presence the early Celts felt so keenly. And that's your history of Halloween this year. And that's not all. For your special Halloween treat this year, I present to you another episode of the radio drama Suspense. And an episode that aired on November 24th, 1942, titled The Body Snatchers. The radio play has nothing to do with the 1955 book and subsequent movies of interstellar spores that set out on taking over human bodies. It was, however, the basis for a 1945 film called The Body Snatcher, which was the last film to feature Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi. Body snatching was a lucrative business, since prior to the United Kingdom's Anatomy Act of 1832, only bodies of men condemned to death were to be available for dissection by medical experts. Of the near 500 cadavers that were needed by a variety of professionals for dissection, only about 10% were legally available. The rest came from those who, well, illegally dug up bodies. These men were known as body snatchers, or as resurrectionists, or even as resurrection men. This was just a misdemeanor in the United Kingdom. As long as no jewelry or other items were stolen, it was a crime that many were willing to risk. William Burke and William Hare were arrested and found guilty in 1832 of killing 16 people so that their bodies could be sold in this underground market. And not long after, a group known as the London Burkers were also arrested for murdering people for this practice. The radio drama you are about to hear is a fictionalized story based on these all-too-real and all-too-gruesome events. Be aware as well that body snatching was not limited to England, as it happened all over the world, and rumors persist that this practice might still be happening where you least expect it.
The hushed voice and the prowling step in the dead of night, the crime that is almost committed, the stir of nerves at the ticking of the clock, the rescue that might be too late, or the murderer who might get away. Mystery and intrigue and dangerous adventure. We invite you to enjoy stories that keep you in suspense.
For Suspense, tonight we present The Body Snatchers by John Dixon Carr.
Beware of the body snatcher who prowls after dark. Beware of the graves he robs. Beware of the murders he commits to provide new corpses for the doctors.
Up to the year 1832, the body snatchers terrorized England. According to the law, only 4 bodies a year could legally be supplied to the surgeons for anatomical study. And even these were a monopoly granted to the Barbers and Surgeons Company of London. But the study of surgery had to go on. In hundreds of medical schools all over England, perfectly reputable doctors were compelled to buy bodies and ask no questions. In 1828, burst the scandal of Burke and Hare, who found grave robbing too slow and murdered 16 persons in order to supply Dr. Knox of Edinburgh. And so, out of basic good purpose, sprang the evil of
the body snatcher.
Turn back the clock now to a cold night just 110 years ago. Look into the brick kitchen of a house on Wandsworth Common, not far from London. There in the light of a tallow dip sits old Mother Slade in her draggled bonnet.
What's a keeping 'em? 2 hours. 2 mortal hours by the Dutch clock. And they're not here yet.
Mother Slade?
And the graveyard not half a mile off. And once I thought I heard church bells ring. And once...
Mother Slade, did you call?
No, my girl, I did not call.
But I thought I...
And what are you doing up at this hour, my girl?
I was only locking up, Mother Slade.
Ain't it enough to have taken you over from a good-for-nothing mother, not worth the gunpowder to blow her up?
Please, Mother Slade.
And given you a good home, and brought you up practically like a lady, with only the housework to do?
I'm sorry, Mother Slade. Only I wish you wouldn't talk like that about me own mother.
And what do you do, Peggy Lester? You stop up until this hour. You mislay me snuffbox 20 times a day.
I was only going to say, I thought I heard a horse and cart in the lane.
In our lane?
Yes, Mother Slade. There it is now.
Yes. Easy, my dears. Drive easy with the merchandise. The doctors don't like it if you bump the merchandise.
Merchandise, Mother Slade? What's that?
I'll tell you what it is, my girl.
I didn't mean anything, Mother Slade.
It's your Uncle Matt and your cousin Rob are coming home from their business. That's what it is. You hear that, Piggy Lister?
I didn't mislay your snuffbox. It's on the table.
And if you don't want me to take my fingernails to you instead of a strap, you get on up to bed this minute, do you?
Yes, Mother Slade.
I'm a-coming, my dears. Don't be impatient. I'm a-coming. Nasty dim light this candle gives. Oh, old Mother Slade has got the rheumatics so cruel she can hardly move. Just pull back the bar. Open the door. Wilmette, did you get it?
Did we get it? Strike me blind, but that's a good one, ain't it, Rob?
Stir the gab, cord, you get. Get inside and close the door.
They ain't after you.
Ain't they? Can't you hear anything?
I thought I heard church bells.
More like a perishing funeral bell, if you asks me.
Take it easy, Rob. Take it easy. We've shaken them off.
Have we? I wish I was as certain as some people. The spades and sack is still in the cart.
Let them stay. Who's a-coming to find them?
Then you didn't get it after all, you six-cow pair of...
Don't you start a-blaming us.
Now, you shut your potato trap, Mother Slade, or Matt'll make you shut it.
What happened?
I'll tell you what happened. We was too quick, that's what. The girl was only buried this afternoon.
The sooner the better, my dear. What's the good of the merchandise if it ain't fresh, eh?
You hold your noise and listen. We left the horse and cart outside like we always do. We creeps up to the lych gate of the churchyard.
Walk softly, Matt. Walk softly, Rob. In your oily beaver hat and neckcloths. Under the starlight and the white frosted elms. Take care of the graves, too. Spring guns may be set in some of them to protect the dead from marauders. And if the coffin is one of those new iron ones, all your labor will be in vain. Open the gate softly.
Don't make such a bloody row with them shovels.
I can't help it. I'm loaded down with all this stuff.
Oh, And who'll do all the work when we do get there? I will.
Matt.
Aye?
Listen.
I can't hear nothing except your teeth chattering.
Matt, there's other people besides us in this here churchyard.
Aye, 200 or 300 deaders. But they won't bother us.
I means living people.
Don't talk soft.
Somebody's got a dark lantern. I seen it flash past the gravestones.
Oh? Where?
Can't you see it now? It's coming straight toward us.
Yes, I see him. Come on.
They've seen us, Matt.
Don't stop peeping, devil. Let him have it, lad.
He's about it, Walt. Stand beyond the gravestones. Stand. They can't shoot through stone.
Matt, it says here, sacred to the memory
of... It's the girl's relatives. They've been watching her grave.
All they need, boys. They
want to
get up now. They'll have to climb the wall.
Oh,
Struth. If only I had me Barkus. First time in 2 years I've gone without a brace of pistols, and this happens.
But you ain't got your Barkus, Matt Patterson.
I got what's just as good. Give me a shovel.
What are you going to do?
Charge them. This here shovel's got a nice edge.
Are you daft?
They'll have to take time out to reload, won't they? Hear that? Somebody started the bill. That'll bring down every peeler within a mile. If you want a Tyburn ticket and a neck in a rope, stop where you are. But if you don't want to get scragged before your time, follow me.
That's all there is to it, Mother Slade. We went out by the gate and blow me if they could stop us.
You perishing numbskulls. Did they recognize you?
No. We had our neckerchiefs around our eyes.
And did you do it?
I don't know. There's blood on the shovel.
No, there ain't, Mother Slade. I wiped it off.
Anyway, we're here. What I want now is a Christian fire to sit by and a drop of spirits to warm my stomach.
There's no spirits in the house, Matt Patterson.
Don't you lie to me, you ugly man.
Let go of me hand, Matt Patterson. I'm warning you.
Better let it go, Matt.
There's no spirits. Only half a loaf of bread. Don't I know it? I haven't tasted a drop of gin all day. The black dog's on me back.
Well...
Hark at what I say. The doctor was promised a corp tonight. All right, dearie, he gets a corp tonight.
Oh, there's that funeral bell again.
What's the clock, old hag? Come on, spit it out.
A nice young corp without any trouble or bother.
Aye.
What about young Peggy upstairs?
Strike. Me blind.
What about it, eh?
You'd have to be mighty careful.
Why?
You'd have to smother her with a pillow while I sit on her legs. That's what Burke and Eyre done up in Edinburgh. Then you don't leave any marks on them. See?
Here, Arthur, take weight. What?
If the doctors see they've been polished off, just plain murdered, they won't have nothing to do with it. Leastways, they don't like it.
Like it or not, dearie, they all do.
Who's buying the beef tonight?
Dr. George Arnold.
Him? The young fella out Fulham way?
That's the man, dearie.
But I thought he was too pious and holy to play.
That's what Dr. Arnold thought too, till they started putting the screws on him at Bart's College. No corp, they said to him. No lecture. No lecture, no students. It all comes to it, dearie, sooner or later.
What beats me is why they got to have these bodies. You'd think the doctors killed enough people as it is, without a buying them after they was dead.
Don't you question the ways of Providence, Matt Patterson.
You can't do it, Matt. You can't do it, Mother Slade.
You stow that noise, Bob Prentice.
Do you want to wake the poor girl upstairs?
But you can't do it. This cove Arnold, he knows her.
Arnold knows who?
He knows Peggy. Peggy Fair worships the ground he walks on.
Oh.
He set her arm once when Mother Slade broke it, accidental-like, and she can't forget him. What's Arnold going to think when he opens up the sack and he finds
What can Arnold do? He's bought her, ain't he? He can't go to the police and say he's bought it.
Peggy. Peggy Lester.
Don't do it, Mother Slade. Don't do it.
And how do you two thickheads know what Mother Slade is a-going to do?
You're going to kill her, ain't you?
Peggy. Peggy Lester.
I thought I heard her moving about upstairs.
You did, Mr. Milk and Water. She's on the stairs now.
Rob, you're the least to be depended on. Go out and fetch in the sack.
Don't do it. It'll bring us all bad luck.
Matt, you're a lad after me own heart. You stop where you are and do just as I tell you. Trim the candle. Let's have it all nice and snug.
What'll she bring, do you think?
15 guineas. Huh? Maybe 20. Maybe more.
20 guineas? Strike me blind. But this is a way of doing business that I like.
Shh. Listen.
Did you call me Mother Slade?
That's right, my ducky. That's right, my little pet. Put your wrap around you and your slippers to keep your feet warm and come right down here to Mother Slade.
I'm coming, Mother Slade. I'm coming.
Who in those times would be a surgeon and still be an honest man? At that drugged hour of the night, look into the sitting room of a spacious house. Many candles are still alight there, though they have burned down nearly to their silver sockets. There is Chinese paper on the walls and a Turkey carpet underfoot. In front of the fire, now almost out, sits Dr. George Arnold, with his bottle green coat and heavy hair.
Dr. Arnold, sir.
I beg your pardon, Mrs. Tancred.
Dr. Arnold, sir, it's gone 2:00.
Yes, so it has.
You've got a lecture to deliver tomorrow, and you'll be all worn out. Why don't you go on up to bed?
Mrs. Tancred.
Yes, sir?
You're a jewel of a housekeeper. I admire you, and I can't do without you. But would you please go away and let me alone?
Sure, I'm very sorry, sir. No offense intended.
Stop. I shouldn't have said that. I'm thinking too much, perhaps.
And smoking too many cigars, if you'll excuse me.
Why must they keep tolling that bell at East Hill Church? Why must they keep it up all night?
Well, sir, Elsie says the parson told them to do it. Elsie...
Wait. Who is Elsie?
Dr. Arnold, sir. I know you're always up in the clouds, mooning over books and whatnot, but I did think you'd recognize the name of your own parlor maid.
Oh, that Elsie. I see. Well?
Elsie says it's because of the murder in the churchyard.
What murder?
2 resurrection men. Body snatchers, sir. Oh, you wouldn't know anything about such people.
No, of course not.
They were caught trying to rob a grave, but they got away. One of them was a horrible big fella. Split Willie Kendrick's head open with the edge of a shovel. Is anything wrong, sir?
No, not exactly.
Well, I thought for a second, seeing how you looked.
Did they get the body?
Yes, sir. It was Willie Kendrick. His head was split open with a shovel.
No, I mean, did these resurrection men get what they were after?
No, sir.
Thank God.
Oh, you may well say that, Doctor.
Well, I wasn't exactly speaking in the religious sense, but never mind.
Well, Elsie says there are what she calls peelers all over the place.
Peelers?
Yes, these new policemen. After Sir Robert Peel. And somebody from the new detective police that they're using instead of the Bow Street runners.
Well, Mrs. Tancred, I'm going to smoke one more cigar and then I'm going to bed.
Very good, sir.
You see, sometimes you give orders, then it's too late to recall them. Whatever the medical practice is, you can't look your conscience in the face afterwards. Then, I can't tell you how or why, a miracle comes along and saves you, and you're free, you're... What was that?
Sounds like a horse and cart in the drive, sir.
Mrs. Tancred.
Yes, Doctor.
Will you please go upstairs? Now, make haste.
Well, if it's visitors, sir, or even a patient...
Mrs. Tancred, you heard my instructions. Obey them.
Sir, there's the front door bell.
Yes, I heard it. For the last time, go away. I will admit whatever visitors we have.
Yes, sir.
Good evening, dearie.
Oh, come into the sitting room here, Miss... Mrs. Slade.
La, sir. Just call me Mother Slade. It don't hardly seem natural or friendly to hear anything else. It's a pleasure to curtsy to you, Doctor. Coo, what a lovely room.
I suppose...
Your candles is going out, though. One by one. Poof. Then you'll be in the dark.
I suppose you've come to report failure.
Failure, dearie?
I understand you didn't get what you went after.
Bless you, dearie. We got something just as good. Finest piece of merchandise you ever saw.
You haven't got it here.
Bless you, dearie. Mother Slade always keeps her word. Bring the merchandise in, my dears, so the doctor can see it.
Quiet, please.
Oh, of course, dearie, I forgot. The big fellow with the black eyebrows is Uncle Matt. The little fellow with the watery eyes is Cousin Rob. And between them, in that sack, they're carrying...
Well, who is it in the sack?
19-year-old girl, dearie. Finest anatomical specimen you ever saw.
Merciful
heavens. Where do you want this here thing dumped, Governor?
Easy now, Matt.
Why did you bring it here?
That's where you told us to bring it, dearie.
I mean, why did you bring it to the front door? Why not to the surgery?
Only place in the house where there was lights, Governor. Hurry up now. Where do you want it?
Well, take it...
Yes, dearie?
Take it over and put it in the cupboard there, where I'm pointing.
This cupboard here, sir?
Yes, then close the cupboard door.
Shame on you two. Tracking your muddy boots over the doctor's lovely turkey carpet. Easy, my dears. Easy now.
All right, Robin. She
goes. Don't bruise the merchandise. Whatever you do, don't bruise the merchandise.
Right, me blind, what's the odds? She can't feel it now. Here's your body, Mr. Sawbones. Now, let's see your money.
Well, just one moment before I give it to you.
There ain't no itch in this, is there? Better not be.
No, I made a bargain with you and I'll stick to it.
Thank you. That's uncommon genteel of you.
Kindly stand back, sir. You're 2 stone of fat heavier than I am, and you don't impress me.
Easy, Matt. Take it easy.
I want to ask only one question. Where did you get that body?
That's a question, dearie, what people in your profession don't ask.
Why not?
Because they don't dare. That's why.
Would the police be interested in where you got the body?
No, dearie. Not half so interested in as where we brought it. To your house. It's your responsibility now.
Yes, I suppose it is. The victim wouldn't be, by any chance, that pretty little girl you used to treat so unmercifully.
You hold your noise about how I treated her.
I was rather fond of Peggy.
Oh, strike me blind. I think the Sawbones...
Oh, get out of this house, all of you. Go on, get out.
Not without that money, dearie. It's 20 guineas now.
There's money on the table under that newspaper. Take what you want, Ernie. Get out of here before I...
Oh... What was that?
Aye. What was it?
A late visitor, I imagine.
Was you expecting anybody? Eh?
No.
Don't drop the lovely money, Rob. Don't drop it all over the carpet. Pick it up.
Is there the back way, are they?
Yes, it's the way you should have come. Through that arch and down the passage.
Thank you for the rhino, Governor. And no games, Mark.
Good night. Good night, dearie. Good night, dearie. You've got the body. You've got the body now.
Yes. Yes. Yes, I've got the body now. I've got the body now. Poor, poor little devil.
Dr. Arnold, sir?
In heaven's name, Mrs. Tancred, haven't you gone to bed yet?
I had to get up, sir, to answer the bell.
Yes, yes, of course. I'm sorry.
Dr. Arnold. What's the matter with you?
Matter?
You're as white as a ghost and you're almost crying.
Am I? Well, we must remedy that.
Oh, it's so dark in here, I could barely see you sitting there. The candles going out, one after another. Nothing but smoke and an ugly smell of grease and that cupboard door.
What about that cupboard door?
Well, I always declare, sir, it won't keep shut without any latch or bolt. If you'll excuse the liquor...
Mrs. Tancred, keep away from that cupboard.
Dr. Arnold, sir. Are you ill or anything?
No, but keep away from that cupboard. Who rang the bell?
Oh, dear, I was almost forgetting. It's that man Elsie was talking to us about.
What man?
The officer of the detective police, sir. He wants to see you.
Well, I'll see him, but in some other room, not here. It's as you say, there's not enough light.
Not a bit of it, Doctor, not a bit of it. Never too dark, as you might say, where the police are concerned.
I couldn't help it, sir. He must have followed me down the hall.
Are you...
That's right, Doctor. I'm Stalker at your service. Inspector Stalker.
How do you do, Inspector? Mrs. Tancred, you may go.
Oh, by your leave, sir. I'll just get some more candles and put them in that bracket by the cupboard. It's not in use.
No, you needn't trouble.
It's no trouble, sir. Excuse me.
First of all, Doctor, I must apologize for intruding as late as this.
Not at all, Inspector. Will you be seated?
Thank you, sir. Thank you kindly. Now, I dare say you're wondering why I'm here.
Yes, I am, rather.
It's a bad business, Doctor. A very bad business.
You mean the murder in the churchyard?
Oh, you've heard about it.
Well, my housekeeper said something about a man being killed with a shovel.
That's right, Doctor. Not much doubt about who did that.
No?
No. The little fella dropped his dark lantern with the initials on it. They're professional body snatchers. We've had our eye on them for a long time. Speaking of body snatchers, Doctor...
Well?
I expect this anatomy law is pretty hard in you surgeons.
It's an infamous law, sir.
All the same, Doctor, it is the law.
Yes.
And if any surgeon happened to be caught with a body, especially a murdered body...
What are you hinting at?
Oh, nothing, Doctor, nothing. By your leave, I only want to ask a question.
Well...
What time did your friends leave? Now, come, Doctor. As one man of the world to another, do you see any green in my eye? You are not going to say you had no guests when their horse and cart are still at your front door.
They didn't get away.
No, Doctor, they didn't. They met a little reception committee as they left by the back door. Darby's on the wrists. Snap. Just as I might reach out and touch your wrist. Like this.
What do you mean by Darby's?
Handcuffs. I've got a pair in my pocket. Gags into their mouths. That's to keep them from biting.
Look, do we have to go on with this? You already seem to know everything I could tell you.
Not exactly everything. I don't know, for instance, where you've hidden the girl's body.
You're a very diligent man, Inspector Stalker.
Thank you, sir. I try to do my duty.
You said... A girl?
These gin-muddled degenerates have been watched every second since they left East Hill Churchyard. They hadn't a body then, but they brought one here. And there's only one other person who lives in the same house with them.
Dr. Arnold, sir?
Mrs. Tancred, listen to me.
Yes, sir?
Must you always break in with the most completely ill-timed entrances at all the worst period of my life?
I was only trying to be helpful, sir.
That's right, madam. Always be helpful.
You had to have some light. Here's the candle, sir. Five of them, in a big candelabrum. We can hang them in the bracket.
Ma'am, hold up that light. Hold it high.
Really, sir? I'm not in the habit of being spoken to as...
Hold it high, I tell you.
Do as the inspector tells you, Mrs. Tancred.
Ooh, this is a very fine carpet you've got here, Doctor.
Yes, others have admired it tonight.
But it oughtn't to have footprints on it. Muddy footprints. Footprints leading from the door... Past the sofa, past the hearth, over to...
To that cupboard. Quite correct.
I think that's done it, Dr. Arnold.
I think it has, Inspector Stalker.
We couldn't have proved anything against you for that churchyard business, but this...
Let me open Bluebeard's cupboard, Inspector. Let me be the first to show you what's inside. You wanted a certain body. It appears you've come to the right place. Now... Look.
Lord Almighty.
I'm the body, Mr. Police. Standing up, I'm very much alive. And I'm wearing a nice new dress that the doctor gave me.
That I gave you?
Don't say anything. Please don't say anything.
Stop a bit, miss. Aren't you Peggy Lester?
Yes. Just because the doctor has to be so terribly respectable and a girl who's fond of him has to come here in secret...
Wait a minute, everybody. Peggy Lester, you're lying.
I am not lying.
So that's it. Why didn't I guess it? It's the oldest body snatcher's trick in the world.
Is it?
Of course, the old pinchpenny, like Mother Slade, couldn't sacrifice a good household grudge. Of course they brought the body here, instead of taking it to the surgery, where it might get locked up.
Could you be persuaded, Inspector, to tell us just what you're talking about?
The body snatcher, sir.
Well, what about them?
They take a living accomplice and put him into a sack and sell him to a green doctor as a dead man.
Yes, but see here,
they get the best price they can. Then in the middle of the night, that accomplice gets up and robs the doctor's house. And the doctor can't tell us because he's bought illegal goods.
I never intended to go through with it.
No, young woman?
I tell you, I wasn't going to rob the house. They made me do this. I was going to tell Dr. Arnold. When I found out where they were taking me, I pretended to go through with it so I could warn the doctor. They can hurt so much, you'll agree to almost anything.
Well, that sounds like the truth, but it puts me in a funny position and no mistake.
Well, your three murderers, Inspector, seem to be leaving.
Yes, they're leaving right enough. Trussed up like fowls and under guard.
Does anybody go with them?
Well, how can anybody go with them? I'm willing to believe this girl acted under threats. She's committed no crime. And I don't for the life of me see how we can touch you.
Can't touch me?
No, sir. And confound you for making me lose a night's sleep. There's no body. You didn't even buy a body. Will you tell me, Doctor, just what crime you've committed?
And so ends The Body Snatchers, a story of London at midnight, 100 years ago. And tonight's story of suspense. Columbia presents these tales of mystery and intrigue and dangerous adventure for your relaxation and enjoyment. Next Tuesday, there will be another in this series. Same hour, 9:30 Eastern Wartime. William Spear, the producer, John Dietz, the director, Alexander Semler, the composer, conductor, and John Dixon Carr, the author, are collaborators on Suspense.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Thank you for tuning into this special edition of the Paranormal News Insider, the special Halloween edition. And again, as I said earlier, tonight I'm not going to be live in the studio on November 5th, but I will be back on November 13th live in the studio. And so you may be hearing this on November 5th, but rest assured, November 13th, we will be back in studio live with a brand new show. But until then, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the wood, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And you might want to take a look behind you. Yeah, you don't see it, but you might want to look again. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
Have a safe and happy Halloween.